It's like, oh, okay, so we can give out awards. We just haven't earned any awards. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, that's how it works. We can serve the food. We just can't sit at the table.
Boom.
Hey folks, it's Kara Mahorn, aka The Blurred Girl, and welcome back to The Blurred Girl Podcast. So, the Oscars are this weekend, and this is important because of who my guest is this week. It's none other than April Rain, the creator of Oscars So White, the Oscars So White hashtag. She's also a businesswoman, activist, mom, and so much more. She joined me a couple of weeks ago for a chat the week the Oscars were announced. So this is before Sundance, but after that. Now, one of the other things that I'm really happy about is the fact that I got a chance to learn a little bit about April's background. For instance, I had no idea that she had a law degree in campaign finance. She even gives us a little primer on it. Plus, her husband took the bar a second time just so he could practice law in the state that she got a new job in. That's love right there. That's what that is. I also got the scoop on how she got to go to the Oscars last year. She was an attendee, if you remember. She was on the red carpet in the audience. Now, I was under the impression that the Oscars invited her. Apparently, they did not. I'm telling you, there's so much tea. It's, oh my God. So we go into what happened and what actually went down and how she got there. And we also go into what we're happy about, like Matthew Cherry's Hair Love and the fact that that got nominated. I'm very excited about that. So in addition to all of that, we talk about a little bit about politics and things like that. But yeah, man, the tea in this episode is piping hot. So I'm actually not going to make you wait for it. After this break, my interview with writer, lawyer, mom, and activist, April Rain. If you've been following me for any length of time, then you know I stay busy and it's really hard for me to get in all the reading that I want to do. So that's why I'm a huge fan of audiobooks from Audible. And if you use my special code, audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl, you can get a free subscription. Now I listen to them when I'm cleaning the house, traveling. They're especially great for passing the time on those long lines at the airport. Now currently I'm listening to Akata Witch for three reasons. One, I'm a fan of Nnedi Okorafor's writing. She writes incredible science fiction featuring African women. Two, it's been dubbed the Nigerian Harry Potter. And three, because Yetide Badaki, who was just on the show recently, is narrating it. Now, what I love about audiobooks like this is that, kind of like scripted podcasts, they are like listening to old-time radio programs, and I love that. But don't take my word for it. Start your own commitment-free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl. You can choose from one audiobook and two Audible originals you can't hear anywhere else. Also, any credits that you don't use totally roll over to the next month. So start your 30-day free trial today by going to audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl. Now, back to the show. Welcome, April Rain. I appreciate getting a chance to talk to you one-on-one. I've spoke to you, you've been on the Radical Geeks show live, but yep. I'm excited to have you on one-on-one to ask you all the things.
Let's do it.
So first of all, everybody, well, unless you've been living under a rock, everybody should know that you created the Oscar So White hashtag in, okay, give me the year, because I always
2015.
I always say going to year six. Wow, I was gonna say 2016. It's 2015. Wow,
2016 is really when it took off, though. So that's a fair guess. Because that was the year that, for example, Jada Pinkett Smith sort of weighed in because Will didn't get nominated for Concussion, and and it was also the second year in a row that no people of color were nominated for any of the acting awards. So I think a lot of folks thought one time is a fluke, two times is a pattern, and maybe we actually need to listen to what this lady is talking about.
And 6 years later, but we'll get to that in a second.
Exactly.
So, because it's been a week, we've had in we'd have impeachments and.
Yeah. And, you know, and I absolutely recognize I'm talking about these golden statuettes, which are actually heavier than I realized. You know, and so this probably isn't top of mind for a lot of people. But, you know, I like to approach it from the idea of, especially in these perilous times with the things that are happening within the administration and coming out of the White House, I think we're all looking for a little escapism. We're, you know, we all want to sit in a darkened theater for a couple of hours and just sort of veg out and not think about things. And so that's why, you know, but we don't want to see, you know, straight white men in a war film again. And so that's why these issues are important, even as more important things are happening.
Yes. And I mean, honestly, you don't have to convince me. I get paid to watch movies and read comic books. So,
amen.
And that is for a reason. But even there, we have our crazy, trust me. So it's funny. Everybody sort of got to know you around the Oscar So White hashtag, but you had a life before then.
I mean, kind of. Sort of.
So I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that before we get into the nitty gritty. But where are you from? Where are your people from? How did you get into this?
Yeah, I love that question. No, I very rarely get asked it. I like it. So both of my parents were born in like central northern New Jersey. So Elizabeth, Jersey City, Newark, that area. And I was born in Newark in 1970. So turning 50 in a few months.
Oh, my goodness. I would not have known that. I really wouldn't.
No, it's a thing. It is a whole thing. And so my dad was in the military and we moved around a lot. We never went overseas, but we spent most of the time in the South. So I went to three different high schools in three different states, Texas, Louisiana, and Georgia, in that order. And then after all of that, I knew that I wanted to go to law school. And I also knew that I wanted to sit my butt down for 7 straight years for undergrad and law school and, you know, and be in one place, which was not my experience growing up because of being a military kid.
You were moving around so much.
Oh, my goodness. So
You wanted to hang pictures on the walls. You wanted.
Right. I wanted to make friends that lasted more than 18 months. Such a concept. So I went to the University of Texas at Austin, got my undergrad degree in business, and then went straight on to law school, met my eventual husband in law school. And then we both sets of parents, his and mine, lived on the East Coast. And so when I was offered a job in Baltimore, originally Baltimore, Maryland, I took it with his blessing. And in the truest love that I have ever known, he took another bar exam because he was a baby lawyer and was not licensed to practice in Maryland. So he took a second bar for me.
Oh, wow. That's love.
Isn't it? It's a beautiful thing. And so we have lived in the Maryland and DMV area ever since for the past 25 years now. So I was practicing attorney. I worked for a firm for a few years and he said, no, you can't do that anymore because you're bringing that stuff home and it's killing everybody. Like, this was, you know, early 90s. I was working in a typical firm and we were doing defense work, which meant we were defending tobacco companies and asbestos companies that were killing people. And, you know, and the rent is still due on the first, but he's like, nope, you're going to have to find something else because it is stressing you out. And I can see it. So I got into campaign finance law, having no background in that whatsoever, and did that for, I want to say, about 14 years or so. You know, altogether, I practiced law for just under, I think, 20 years. And then I was doing this job and it was lucrative and it was safe and it was unbelievably boring and killing my soul. So I was looking for ways outside of work to do something to speak to my passion. And that became the entertainment field. So I started as a writer with Broadway Black, which is an online community that highlights the achievements of African Americans on and off the Broadway stage. And I eventually became the managing editor of Broadway Black. And it was during that time that I created Oscar So White, And, you know, it took off and, you know, and hashtags come and go every hour, every day. But this thing had some staying power. And so I said to my husband, hey, what do you think about me making less money and traveling more? Of course, things that any partner wants to hear, right? Yeah. You know, I'm going to be truly happy. And to his credit, you know, he pushed me off that cliff with a parachute of love and support. And, you know, Oscar So White is and I am who I am, how most people know today.
That is amazing. I want that to be a movie.
Well, you listen, if I can at least get a producer credit, I'm in.
You have to completely control it. Otherwise, they'll cast ScarJo as you and it won't work.
Listen, no, he's busy playing a bonsai tree in something. So it'll be okay.
Oh, my goodness. So, see, I'm glad I asked that question because I had no idea that you had a background in campaign finance. So Some of these questions that have been coming up about where the funds are coming and going and things like that.
Listen, I definitely have some inside tea as I'm watching what's happening go on. And, you know, and it's like, oh, no, that's not going to happen. Or, you can say that they're guilty on that particular thing, but it's not going to really mean anything. You know, it's going to be a slap on the wrist kind of thing. And so it's always important to follow the money with respect to campaign finance. But the Federal Election Commission, which sort of is over all of that, doesn't have the power that it used to. And it's also missing some of the vacancies on the bench of commissioners have been around for years. And so they don't even have a full complement of people to sort of throw the book at somebody when it's necessary.
Oh my gosh, it's like not even enough people. It's almost like there's not enough people to police the people.
That's exactly right. There are six commissioners and they are appointed and have to be approved. And it's always three Republicans and three Democrats. So anytime you want to get a vote passed, you know, if you want to say, hey, so-and-so has been stealing money or, you know, whatever the case may be, and, you know, we need to do something about this, you have to, they're all very clearly pro whatever party they're for. And so you, every single time, you have to convince one of them to switch sides so that there can be at least a 4-2 vote. Because otherwise, you know, the Democrats are saying, oh, that's not so bad. Or the Republicans will say, oh, well, they did it too. And so it's a 3-3 deadlock and nothing happens.
Wow.
Yep, that's politics.
Well, wait, actually, that's politics done right. What the situation that we're in right now is...
Oh, please.
It's completely off the rails.
Of the devil. We're not even calling that politics. Like, there's a completely different genre of whatever that is.
Okay. A lot of us had issues with Golden Globes, and then we was like, all right, well, let's wait for Oscars to see what the Oscar nominations are. And what did they do? They went and got two people that we all love.
That's right. Window dressing.
Korean man and a black woman to announce the Oscar nominations as if it was going to soften the blow.
Yep. And they've done that before.
They have.
You know, and even on Twitter, the Academy had their tweets, you know, 2 hours until the nominations, 1 hour before. And they had black folks in the pictures on the tweets. Like, they had a picture of Regina King. It's like, but she ain't nowhere near the Academy this year. And they did the same thing with hosts as well, right? It was supposed to be Kevin Hart last year. You know, right after Oscar So White in 2016, you know, when it was really a problem, they had Chris Rock host, you know? So, yeah, it's like, oh, okay, so we can give out awards. We just haven't earned any awards. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, that's how it works. We can serve the food. We just can't sit at the table.
Boom.
That's all.
And literally, Hattie McDaniel, the first African-American to win the best Oscar for acting in an acting category all those years ago for Gone with the Wind, was not allowed to sit at the table.
Nope.
Because of segregation, you know, so that, you know, and have we come far? I don't know.
Like a black woman hasn't won that since Halle Berry then, right? Because Halle Berry hadn't won since Addie.
Yep, that's correct.
So, okay, so we need to find somebody else with the H in their name to win.
And they have to play a woman in trauma. because that's the
or a slave.
Right. Well, well, that's what I'm saying. It's either abject poverty or there's a mental illness involved, or they're an enslaved woman. And you know, as we get into this, I mean, Lupita Nyong'o is a fantastic example of that, right? So she can play win and for playing an enslaved woman in 12 Years a Slave a few years ago, but now here she's playing not one but two fully realized characters in Us, and she gets a snub.
And not only that, I think her highest paycheck came from two Star Wars movies where you didn't see her face and she looked like a rodent.
That's right.
A rodent with glasses. Also, the thing that I thought was really, really funny was the fact that they thought this was going to work for them and they didn't know Issa Rae, because Issa Rae's face was like...
Yep. Congratulations to those men. Yeah.
To those men.
I mean, he's just the same woman who said on the red carpet, "I'm rooting for everybody black." So what were y'all expecting?
But I will say this, the moment I saw John Cho, I knew Parasite was winning. And I'm like, okay, so they got somebody Korean to tell another Korean I've seen this. I guess the question is, what do we do with the people who are left that we want to support? I want to support Matthew Cherry because I think Hair Love is amazing.
Yeah.
What do we do? Are we not supposed to support that? Because, you know, and I think that that's the biggest question that people have now. Like, why are we in this at all?
Yeah, it's a good question. The short answer is we absolutely support Matthew Cherry and his nomination for Best Animated Short for Hair Love. We also support Bruce Fanks Jr. for his nomination for St. Louis Superman for Best Documentary Short, right? And we also support, you know, Bong Joon-ho for Best Director for Parasite. But I think it's a both and proposition, right? I don't know that we need to watch the Oscars, and I'm actually thinking about whether we need to have alternative programming as we did in 2015 and 2016 for those particular categories when we know that the Academy is going to update their Twitter feed immediately, right? And so I'm still working this through, but I think for me, and everybody is obviously different, I can absolutely scream from the top of my lungs on social media for Matthew and for others without actually rewarding the Academy with my ratings.
Right. With the hours and the time spent watching the actual
show. Right. Watching for 3 hours. Because, I mean, that's the thing. There's going to be 3 hours, right? There's no host. Mm-hmm. You know, the little skits and montages or whatever are going to be boring as they typically are. You're going to have to wait and wait and wait, you know, to see the categories that you want to see. But the Oscars don't represent us, and so maybe they're not deserving of our ratings and our support overall on this particular night.
Yeah, no, I think that's very valid, and I also wonder if there's some other way that we could use social media to, because like you said, the Academy updates their Twitter feed and their site like almost instantly. We don't need to be watching the actual network and giving them the money, the eyeballs that they basically get the money from advertisers to promote.
Well, it may be the alternative programming. So, like, I think in 2015, you know, we booted up Netflix and we all watched The Wiz together.
That's what I was thinking.
And I think we watched Best Man in 2016. You know, and there's a new movie out by a black female filmmaker called Jezebel on Netflix. And so maybe that's it. You know, that we're checking the Twitter page, but we're also sort of live tweeting, you know, a movie that better reflects us. I don't know. We'll see.
In your household, are you the only one who's watches the Oscars at this point? Is the rest of your family like, yeah, you know what, forget it?
Oh, sure. They never did. They really, I mean, my daughter will watch with me because she wants to see the gowns. And so she'll watch that part of it. But
like the red carpet in the beginning or the pregame, basically?
Right. But, you know, for years now, I've been the movie watcher and the movie goer. And so typically, you know, I sort of have to rope off the big TV, as they say in black households, right? You know, I got to rope off the big TV and let them know that this is mommy's night. But I don't know that they've ever truly been interested, you know, except obviously last year, because I took my son as my plus one when I attended the Oscars. So he clearly was interested then. But that was more about him trying to find and meet Zendaya than anything else, I think.
Yeah, that is hilarious. And I'm not mad at him. Is there, I guess the other question is, and this is actually coming from Twitter. There have been people that when I told them I was talking to you, they had this question. Is
There was some really good questions. I saw some of those.
So
I was like, people are really invested in this.
They are. Somebody had asked, the Oscars are the biggest factor for greenlighting, casting, directing, et cetera, in Hollywood. How can we dismantle its credibility so we can finally achieve racial equality in entertainment? Do you think that's what it's going to take?
I think, a couple of things. I'm not sure that's true, that the Academy is truly the gatekeepers with respect to Black people.
Exactly.
Okay? Because what we know is that, you know, Halle Berry wins, Whoopi Goldberg wins, Octavia Spencer wins, and
they get nothing.
You know,
they don't get anything else.
People aren't knocking at their door. You know, very famously, Octavia Spencer said a couple of years ago that even after winning the Oscar, she still received assistance from LeBron James for funding a film and from Jessica Chastain to ensure that her salary was on par with her non-Oscar winning white colleagues. Like, so, you know, so what is the Oscar really getting Black folks and marginalized folks? I don't think it's much of anything. You know, you would think that having Oscar winner, Oscar nominee after your name would open doors and, you know, you can add a zero to your checks and you don't have to audition. They just come to you. Nah, that hasn't been, you know, look at Monique, you know, so that hasn't been true. But to answer the other part of the question, I think that we need to continue to call out the relevancy of the Academy and whether it truly matters.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm wondering about. And I also think that's the thing that I don't know if he's going to get it right the first go around, but I think that is the concept that Tyler Perry is going for. I don't know, like I said, in terms of whether or not if he directs all the things, I don't think it's going to happen. But if he opens his doors to more and more directors and gives them access to what he has, which is, and this is the big thing, is funding. Because at the end of the day, some of the movies that aren't getting on the radar, also, they don't have the money for advertising.
Right. And I don't think people understand how crucial advertising is, especially, you know, right before and right and during the voting process, right? Because
yeah, the timing is everything.
It has to be. And so these studios are like, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to make, you know, a quote unquote Black film or a quote unquote queer film. It's like, so it's out there and it may even do well at the box office. But if we're talking about actual awards, that same studio is putting out 5, 6, 10 films a year. They have the same budget for those 10 films. And so they decide, you know, well, this film we think is, you know, has the best shot of winning awards. And so we're going to put all of our money into advertising for them and leave those quote unquote Black films or queer films or whatever on the wayside without funding. So, you know, Ava said a few years ago with respect to Selma, the screeners were not sent out by the studio on time.
Yeah.
And, you know, Academy members, you know, they get screeners for the films or they can go out and see them in the actual theaters. Well, if you can watch it on your laptop or if you can get up out of your, you know, and have to take off your bunny slippers, you know, which are you right. going to choose? And so if the screeners aren't right there in your hand, then that means they're, you know, your film may not get the exposure that it should. So, you know, I rail, you know, I said Oscar so white, but it's truly entertainment so white, you know, and entertainment so exclusionary, right? That's truly what I'm talking about at this part. It just doesn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah,
as well.
And I also think, there was something that you wrote with Variety. I just want to quote real quick. I think it's interesting that you also said it's a problem that the Academy's voting membership is not required to view the films before they vote. You were just mentioning that. So it really becomes a popularity contest amongst mostly straight white males. So also given what you've just discussed, like all of the things, if things are going out late and not everybody gets everything, it doesn't even sound like all the white films are being seen by everybody. Because it sounds like so many films. Do you have any idea? I'm just asking. Do you have an idea on average how many movies the Academy members are supposed to watch?
They're not supposed to watch any. I mean, you know, in the perfect world, they would see all 380 or whatever the number is films that are released mm-hmm. every year. Right? That's obviously never, ever, ever going to happen. But the Academy isn't even required to, the voting membership, even when we get down to the top five and, you know, and they release the nominees, they're not even required to watch those five before they vote.
Oh, God.
So if it's a popularity contest amongst older white males, because the Academy is still, even after their, you know, commitment to doubling the number of people of color and double the number of women, the Academy is still 84% white and 68% male, and the average age is in like the low 60s, high 50s. Well, even if you don't watch the films, you know the name Scorsese, you know the name Tarantino, you know that 1917 is a war film, you know, all of those things speak to you as an older white male, and so that's what you vote for, right? And that's the unfortunate part, and that's why I'm saying maybe the Academy isn't as relevant as they'd have us believe, because popularity contest amongst older white men, then we're going to be shut out almost
right,
every time.
Even, it sounds like, and I'm not giving a slight to all of the people of color who finally have been inducted into the Academy, you know, to be given and given the right to vote on these films. It sounds like even if you did sit down and watch, you know, even half that amount of films, if you did your due diligence as an Academy member, as a black female, black male, person of color, in that space, it almost sounds like it might not matter.
Your vote almost gets canceled out.
And then it sounds like also that, like you said, a popularity contest, we know that there are gifts given. I can't prove that gifts are being given in order for movies to win, but, you know, that's kind of what's happening in the White House. So, like, I can't.
So if we extrapolate and carry the one, I mean, but we do know. For sure, because like the Hollywood Reporter every year does that interview with the anonymous Oscar voter, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, if you do the numbers, it's typically an older white male who is that person. And they have said, oh, well, I couldn't pronounce Lupita Nyong'o, so I didn't even watch 12 Years a Slave, you know, or, you know, that, you know, or I just gave the ballot to my manager, publicist, agent, whatever. Or I just saw an article in Variety, and so that particular film was top of mind. Or, well, so-and-so hasn't won in a couple of years, and he's getting older, and so, you know, I viewed this as sort of his lifetime achievement award. And for me, again, I don't have any personal information on this as well, but Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Amazing actor, right? Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, Scarface, Godfather 1 and 2, you name it, he's done it, right? But he wins the Oscar for Scent of a Woman.
Yeah.
Now, you can't tell me that hoo-ha is better than, you know, what, I'm going to make him an offer. You know, I know that wasn't Al, that was Marlon, but, you know, I'm here with you now. You know, that kind of, yeah. You know, that kind of, it's unfortunate, you know, and that's why this particular year, you know, I gave the Oscars, the Academy, 5 years to sort of get themselves together. And I've been vocal, but I've also bit my tongue with a lot of the stuff that, you know, that I know that's, you know, inside baseball. But now here we are, year six, and we're still having the same problems. And so, you know, I think this is the year that I'm really starting to sort of pull back the curtain and show you who the Wizard of Oz is. And so me, you, Dorothy, the Tin Man, you know, the moviegoers can say, we're going to walk away and do our own thing because you weren't really running anything anyway.
I mean, I can hear your frustration, but I also wonder, like, and this is a thing that our people, I'm not even going to say people of color, black folks, a problem that also our people definitely have is the support for the indie is not looked at as good as the support for like the big Hollywood film. Now, here's the thing. I'm not going to compare things to like Endgame that have trillions of dollars to spend on special effects. I'm talking about smaller movies where, you know, like Fast Colors, that didn't come out this year, obviously, but I'm just saying Fast Colors is on the same, on par quality-wise, with something like A Marriage Story. You know what I mean? But it's just...
Yeah, like we can take Loose this year.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely. So if you want to compare apples and apples, and yet, you know, Loose didn't receive any nominations with respect to the Academy, yet I thought, you know, I'm very biased, but I thought Kelvin Harrison Jr., you know, had one of the best performances of the year. You know, another relatively smaller movie is Clemency, directed by a black female director with, you know, Alfre Woodard, Aldis Hodge, Danielle Brooks, and Wendell Pierce as the top four leads. Amazing movie, and yet it got no love.
You mentioned that you went to the Oscars last year, and you were invited by the Academy, correct?
So...
Ooh, is this that curtain? Is this? Let me get my teacup.
Mm. Yeah, I give tea and popcorn. You know, and I've been struggling with whether I'm going to tell this, whether I'm going to actually publicize this story, but I think I already am because I'm a grown ass woman. Okay, what happened was so that was 2019. In 2018, talking about Oscar So White, I'm in LA doing sort of a publicity tour. Black woman says, "Hey, you know, can I get you on my podcast? Come to the studio in LA." Sure, mm-hmm. Why not? I show up. There's another brother there. She's like, "Yeah, y'all gonna be on together." His name is Sean. Great, great to meet you, Sean. As we're having this conversation, I find out that Sean has a very important role working at the Academy. Like, I think he was, I don't know what his title is, I'm going to screw it up, but like membership outreach director or something, but it's a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. So Sean sort of co-opts the podcast and says, "Hey, I need to tell you a story and I need to thank you for Oscar So White." Now, you know, lots of people have thanked me, you know, great inclusion representation. I'm sitting there in LA. Sure, I get it. Maybe you're an actor on the side. You're welcome. I'm there. But Sean's like, "No, let me go deeper." He said, "When Oscar So White came out in 2015, I was living in my car." And I was the executive assistant to, like, I don't know, some big wig, you know, one of the huge Academy board members or the president or something, right? And he said, "I went in the next day and I said, 'Hey, this is going to be an issue. We need to get behind it. Let me run with it.'" And he went from executive assistant to his title, his new title, and, you know, sort of was functioning as getting these issues of inclusion and representation on the front burner for the Academy. And he said, "You changed my life. You know, I was able to get an
wow.
act. You know, I was actually, you know," because he said, "You know, I was, you know, showering in the YMCA every day. It was that bad for him." He said, "So to thank you for changing my life, I'd like to invite you to the Academy Awards."
Okay.
That's how that happened. And so, yeah. And so he said that of course I was floored because I didn't even know who he was when I walked in the studio. And I said, "You know, I'm incredibly humbled. Thank you. Absolutely. I'd love to come." And then I walked out of there and I was like, you know, young black man, you know, does he really have the pull? Okay. 6 months later, he reaches out. He's like, "You know, I just want to make sure that you are shopping for your gown because I'm really serious and it's happening."
Oh.
Right. And so, And so that was the conversation I had. And then I saw him I want to say it was maybe TIFF, the Toronto mm-hmm. International Film Festival later that year. And I had a conversation with him and his new boss who was handling issues of diversity within the Academy. And we talked there like over chicken wings in a bar somewhere. That is the only conversation that I have had with anybody who works for the Academy in 6 years.
So you've never been like formally invited to speak to the members of the Academy or anything like that?
Anything.
So wait, when you were on the, red carpet, were there Academy members like, "Wait, what, why is she here?"
No, because I mean, because it's nothing but celebrities, right?
That's true.
It's not like, you know, so it, that wasn't a big deal. And we could have a whole different podcast episode about what it's like to actually go to one of these award shows. But anyway.
No, that whole podcast is going to be around how I get a dress made from Adriana Arpel. That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, well, we can absolutely have that conversation. So the story breaks. April is going to, you know, Oscar So White Lady is going to the Academy Awards. And so I'm telling the story to a guy from, you know, one of the major trade publications, I guess Hollywood Reporter. And he's like, "Oh, that's a wonderful story. You know, I want to, you know," and I said, "Please amplify Sean. I literally would not be going without Sean because the Academy has never reached out." He's like, "Okay, cool." So he calls the Academy and says, "Hey, you know, I just want to get comment from the Academy about this story and, you know, and make sure I'm spelling Sean's name right," so on and so forth. And the Academy says to him, "Well, that's not the narrative that we would like to put forth."
They are basically backing out of it and saying, "This was not official. This didn't come from us. This came from an employee."
Yeah, I mean,
they're,
because otherwise you'd be embarrassed.
Right. You know, and this is Sean Finney, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I just looked up his title. I think at the time he was Associate Director of Membership Relations and Outreach at the Academy of Motion Pictures.
There you go.
That was in 2016. Forgive me, Sean, if you have a different job title now, but that's a lot.
So I was invited to the Oscars by Sean Finney, a employee of the Academy, but with respect to, you know,
They made it sound like, yeah, so an employee just invited a plus one.
Yeah, they made it sound like the Academy may have made these choices the same way that the Academy made it sound like that they had taken on all of these diversity initiatives on their own, and it had nothing to do with Oscar So White. Like, oh, yeah, after 90 years, we've decided on our own that we're going to double the number of people of color and double the number of women. It just so coincidentally happens that this hashtag is trending worldwide.
Yeah, marketing is a powerful drug. I mean,
isn't it? And I stayed quiet. Like, I think you may be the second media outlet that I've told this story, because, you know, I it's not about me. It's about the work, you know, and I was very thankful to go. And it was an experience, you know, that I can check off. I don't know that it was ever on my bucket list, but whatever, I can check it off. But the circumstances behind it, I think, are interesting when, again, we're talking about the relevancy of the Academy.
Yeah, right. So they basically reduced it to, instead of it being something that they could actually get behind and actually support, they turned it into, no, she was just a plus one.
Exactly. Yep. I mean, if the Academy had been smart from a marketing perspective, they would have had me all over the place. Oh, you know, well, April is coming, so clearly she's blessed the Academy, which would have been wrong, and I would have fought at every, you know, at every turn. You know, but clearly, you know, we're doing so much better, because why would she come to the Oscars if she didn't love us, right?
Right.
That's what I would have done.
That's not what happened. There have been some small wins, like this week, HBO finally killed Confederate.
There you go.
So I'm happy about that. That's a small win, but a kind of big one. I think, because had that show been made.
And a win that happened because of black women. Let's just be real about that.
It did. It's a win that happened because of black women. And I also think, black women all the way around, because I think the final black woman to put her foot down on that was Regina King, when she basically single-handedly made Watchmen one of HBO's most watched shows ever. Like, I think it's black women all the way around, from you shouting it out and a whole bunch of women going, this is not happening in Hollywood, all the way to them going, well, fine, we'll try it your way.
Yep. And
look
what happened.
We're like, see? Also, and I'm not taking anything away from Damon Lindelof or the fact that that was an extremely well-written show full of people of color in the writer's room.
Yes.
I'm not taking anything away from that.
At all.
It hasn't been, you know, the hashtag started in 2015. We're fighting an organization that's been around for like
over 90.
What, 90 years. So it's not going to be solved overnight, although we should have seen the needle move more in 6 years. Are there other wins?
I think so.
That we can chalk off?
One of the wins that we've seen definitely since Oscar So White in 2015 is that there are a lot more filmmakers, actors, and actresses from marginalized communities who are creating their own works of art through their own production companies. I think that's huge, right? So they're saying basically, you know, we're not going to wait for these huge, you know, legacy studios to create the work that we want to see. We're going to do it ourselves. Obviously, Ava is a huge example of that. Michael B. Jordan is an example of that. And specifically with MBJ, you know, he created Outlier Society Productions and was an early proponent of the inclusion writer, because it's not just the faces that we see on the screen that are important. It's also the folks working behind the camera. And so if you are committing to ensuring that, you know, half of the crew is, or whatever number you choose, you know, 25%, whatever, is women or queer people or people of color, that's big too, because, you know, knowing that, I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, you know, I want to be an actress, you know, just like Regina King, or an actor just like Michael B. Jordan. But it's another thing to say, I love fashion and I can't, you know, act my way out of a paper bag, but I can make the hell out of a garment. And I now have, you know, Ruth E. Carter to look up to as an Oscar-winning costume designer.
Costume designer, right?
I know how things should be placed in a room, you know, to give it a full effect. And I didn't know that there were black female production designers like Hannah Beekler. I want to do that. Or I want to do, you know, I can't do film, but I can do music. And so I want to do a score, right? So representation is incredibly important behind the camera too. And I think that is one of the wins that we're seeing. That is not just the actors and actresses and directors, you know, sort of the sexy categories, but we're seeing more representation behind the camera so young kids growing up can see the possibilities there as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have a friend who's a cinematographer, Sibel Martin, and Sibel is one of only two in the history of NYU cinematography department, only two black women who've ever graduated from that department. And the second one, I think, was maybe 2 years ago, and she was 15, 16, 20 years before that.
Yeah.
And she... finally, Shonda Rhimes actually put her on a show 2 years ago, and she's currently one of the cinematographers on All Rise. And I when I tell you, outside of Ava, she's like, yeah, there's like five of us.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Whatever it is, I can count it on one hand.
Exactly. And so that's the other thing I'm also tired of. And I've been saying this when someone goes, let's celebrate the fact that this is the first black whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, let's celebrate that. And then next year, let's come back and see if we can get another one. Because what keeps happening is we have our first black and then there's no more after that.
Yep. And we shouldn't still be celebrating first in 2020.
No, in 2020. We just shouldn't. You know, yeah. So what else are you excited about this year? Like just 2020 in general, let's pull that up. We don't have to talk about Oscars so white. It could be anything. But what are some of the things that you're excited about this year?
I mean, rest. I don't like nap.
You said rest.
You know what? This will be my third year going to Sundance. And it's always my favorite weekend of the entire year.
One day I'll go. I have never been to Sundance. One day I'm going to pull that off.
You need to. You know, and if you are able to get into the right parties, and I absolutely understand my privilege here, and I'm sure that there are several parties that I don't even know about, much less have access to. Like, it can be a really black experience. You know, so last year I was there and, you know, in one of the lounges and like, you know, some woman was backing it up on Lena Waithe and she's on Insta Story. And so over the side and Tessa Thompson, and Lakeith Stanfield are like bouncing around on the floor and then you know, I'm looking at Daniel Kaluuya and he's, you know, dancing with his love and, you know, and then.
Yeah, we were literally all living through your Instagram feed. We know.
Amazing, you know, just to see these people sort of let their hair down and be themselves and, you know, and be authentic in a safe space surrounded by snow and white folks. You know what I mean?
we make our spaces wherever we are.
We have to. I'm excited this year that Spike Lee is going to be whatever it is, the president of the jury for Cannes Film Festival. That's a thing.
Wow.
Yeah. That the first time a black person has had that role.
France will never be the same.
Listen,
when he's up there yelling at people.
I'm trying to get my ticket over there as we speak. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about streaming services. You know, and there are a bazillion of them between Amazon and, you know, Hulu and Disney Plus and BET Plus and all of them. But I'm excited because they seem to be leveling the playing field with respect to movies and TV shows. Like, you know, it's easier to get your stuff up online than it is to get it into the theater. So
a lot of these streaming services are looking for programming, looking for daily programming, looking for, you know, so take that podcast and put it into video or try to, you know, get some of your work out there so that when they're running around and somebody says, hey, listen, you don't have any diverse content. If you already shot 10 episodes of your series on YouTube and someone wants to pay you to take it down and give it to them so they can be syndicated, you're ready.
Boom. And rent is paid.
Yep. Please. Mortgage is paid.
Amen. Amen.
I am very excited about the streaming services as well. Well, honestly, I'm currently excited about the care and feeding of Baby Yoda, but that's a whole different story.
Yep. For sure. Mandalorian.
But Mandalorian is everything. And that's also turning out to be one of the shows that has the most people of color in it, I think, ever. Like, and I'll be honest, and people have heard me say this before, I liked Mandalorian more than I liked Rise of Skywalker. But I think that's because Mandalorian told a single story. And I think there's something to be said, not just for streaming, but for streaming on a weekly basis. I am a binge watcher. I've done it. I'll sit down and watch 13 episodes or something if I have to. But I'm not really gonna take it in the way I'll take in a show that comes on every week, and it's only a half an hour. So I think I think Disney Plus really did the perfect thing with that.
Part of it is the anticipation. You know, you're looking forward to the next week, and it almost becomes like must-see TV used to be back in the day. You have to wait a whole week so that you can see, you know, the ending to the cliffhanger of the week before. And that's sort of kind of cool, you know, in some ways. And absolutely, I've been binge-watched before, and it's great to, you know, okay, next episode is loading in 3, 2, 1. That's great. But there's also something about being able to step away from it. Like Watchmen, I think, is a perfect example. Like, yes, you can watch all 9 episodes or whatever it was, you know, in a row and, you know, spend the day. But there's something about being able to sort of step away and process what you saw and think about the Easter eggs and all the rest of that stuff and get ready for the next episode that I think is becoming much more lost in the process.
Yeah, because in this race to be like, I saw it first to go and spoil it on social media, you know, people aren't taking baths, they're not taking showers, they're not eating properly, they're not hydrating.
There are so many reasons why I block people on social. And yes, other than the dirty legs and feet thing, which you know, but also, you know, you gotta give some time. You know, people have full-time jobs or whatever, they're, you know, dealing with their kids, they may not be able to sit still for 9 hours on a Wednesday and watch something. So, you know, you got to give like the 72-hour break so they can watch it over a weekend or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what is one thing that you are tired of besides the Oscar So White thing? What is one thing that you would like we got to cancel this year in 2020? What are we canceling?
I mean, we need to cancel Trump.
There you go.
I mean, that's an easy one. Give me something I need to think about for a couple of seconds.
Well, you know what? Also, I think the problem also is we have to cancel Trump, but I think there's also this malaise because there have been so many people that are running for president. It's just like, okay, it's almost, and I will admit I go through this too. It's gotten to the point where it's sort of like, I'm not a big sports ball person, but I will watch the Final Four. I don't want to see it when it's 16. I don't want to see it when it's 32.
Right.
Just let me know when it's down to the 4.
Yeah.
And that's when I start paying attention.
You're not filling out a chart every year. You just want to be championship game. I get that. And I think part of the issue this year is that there was not a candidate that had overwhelming charisma. You know, if we remember back to the glory days of Obama, like in 2007, right? I mean, everybody was following behind him like the Pied Piper. There was just something special about him. And for me, I am very biased. For me, the person that came closest to that sort of magic was Julian Castro. And unfortunately, you know, he's out now and has given his support to Warren, which I think is fine. But, you know, I think part, you know, we had so many candidates in the beginning, so many debates, you know, and the process starts so far in advance of the actual, like, I think it should start January 1 of election year.
Of the election year. I completely agree. I feel like the same week that they announced that they were like 457 candidates, they announced that there were 457 streaming services. Like, it was just like all too much. And Game of Thrones was ending and it was too dark. Like, everything was too much and I just couldn't pay attention.
Yeah, it's too much. So I want to end Trump for sure, but I also want to end the infighting that we're seeing amongst factions of, like, the remaining candidates and even some who have already dropped out. Like, I think that there's definitely a way that you can promote and amplify the fantastic work that you believe your candidate is doing without crapping all over the other candidates, right?
Yeah.
And it almost feels, you know, desperate to me. Like, your candidate can't stand on their own unless you're tearing down and making another candidate look not as good. And so, you know, that's what I would really love to end on social media this year, you know, and forever, that people just, you know, stay in your lane, talk about your candidate, amplify them, you know, whatever, do the phone banks and do door-to-door and canvassing. All of that is fantastic. But I think we're going to you know, all of us are going to beat up all of these candidates so badly that whenever we get to an eventual nominee, people are going to be like, ugh, you know, like I can tell you 474 things that are horrible about this person. And, you know, I'm just not going to be interested at all because I've read months and months of, you know, how horrible this person is. And that's what concerns me, because we already have issues of voter suppression. Right. Mm-hmm. If we add on to that voter turnout because people have malaise, as you said, or, you know, are against the candidate because of stuff that they've read on social media or whatever, then how do we actually beat Trump?
Yeah. How do we? And the thing is, we're not going to beat him by the infighting and being all uncoordinated, because dissension in the ranks is how it works.
Right. I mean, there's a phrase that says, you know, Republicans fall in line and Democrats fall in love. And I think that's really telling.
Yeah, right? It is.
Republicans can be loud and wrong, but doggone it, they're going to be loud and wrong on one note.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And I, the other thing that terrifies me, you know, besides the brink of possible war, is he gets impeached, right? And then we have this hellacious few months of Pence, which actually also terrifies me, because people have not been paying attention to Pence, but he's equally terrifying.
Absolutely. And part of it also is Pence is a calmer version, right?
Trump,
and so
yeah,
people
he's
are
like,
going to be like, anything other than Trump is okay. I'm going to try and work with this guy. And Pence has really horrible views with respect to, you know, women's choice and other things.
LGBTQ.
You know,
community.
Absolutely.
He's horrible.
You know, and so he's definitely not necessarily the lesser evil. He just may be the slightly more attractive one, right?
Yeah.
So we got to be careful, you know, that we're trying to get rid of the spray tan and the fake hair, and we're putting somebody equally evil in office as well.
Well, I just really wanted to, you know, thank you for hanging out with me and shedding some light. I did not know that that is how you got to the Oscars, and that was fascinating. And I also think that I will be keeping my ear to the Twitter feed, my eyeballs to the Twitter feed, to see what you come up with for what we should be doing on Oscar night. Because yeah, I'm tired. I'm tired of taking time out of my day to watch things and get depressed.
Right.
And then before I go, I also want to thank you personally so much for doing what you do. Not just Oscar So White. You listeners don't know how much work April does behind the scenes to keep a lot of us smaller brown folk informed about what's going on, as well as meeting each other. And so, and that's not a job that you have to do, and that's not a job that you get thanked for. And I want to just take a moment to thank you for that, because
thank you so
that's
much.
Important.
I mean, that means a lot. You know, I will say, you know, obviously with a highly visible platform like yours is as well, you know, you get a lot of crap all day in your mentions. And so, you know, it's always incredibly humbling and appreciated when somebody says, you know what, this made a difference, or, you know, I appreciate this, or let me tell you, like my favorite thing in the entire world is using this network I have now to connect people and letting them go forth, right? So let me introduce you to so-and-so, and you guys go off and create a whole bunch of money or create a new podcast or whatever the case may be. And I don't need to be in, you know, in any part of that. I just love knowing that I was able to facilitate that collaboration. And, you know, and we've seen that, you know, with the brunches that I hold from time to time, people have gone off and actually gotten jobs from there.
Yeah, and honestly, y'all don't know, like April literally would be like, all right, everybody say what you do and put some intention behind it and put it out there. And you don't realize until someone tells you to do that no one has ever asked you to do that before.
Yeah.
You don't realize
we,
that.
Especially Black women, but Black people generally, we always diminish our own light.
Yeah.
You know, and so I, you know, I get very, you know, very bold with people. It's like, no, don't just say that you, you know, write scripts or whatever. You know, don't just say you're a writer. Say that you are the only Black showrunner. You know?
Right.
Because that is true. And why aren't you, you know, this is the time for you to boast and talk your shit a little bit.
And that's the other thing for 2020 that I'm also trying to do. It's because we are so used to hiding our light to make a lot of other people, white people, men, whoever, feel better about themselves. We diminish our light. And
yeah.
That is something that Auntie April taught me. I am not going to keep hiding my light so that I can make other people feel better. If you don't like it, stop looking at me.
That's it. And you know that what they're doing is not your interest or your problem. Like right. you absolutely need to, you know, stand in front boldly and proclaim who you are and what your intentions are and how you plan to get from A to B. And, you know, so that people know that they need to either get down or move away.
Boasting what you do and telling everybody what you do and putting your intentions out there does not mean you're putting anybody else down. I don't understand. I have to have that conversation a lot. Like, I never said you were bad. I never said you were wrong. Right. Why did you have to say it that way? Because it made me feel bad. I'm like, that's between you and your shrink.
Right.
That's not me.
I mean, that's Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter in a nutshell. Right?
Yes.
Saying that my life matter does not mean that your life doesn't also matter. It means that I am focused internally. And who are you to tell me where my focus should be if my focus doesn't affect you at all?
Right. But if you don't get up out my face, your life
Your life will matter less if you want to cross me.
But thank you so much. I thank you for all the people at all the brunches and all the emails and people that you have helped out there who might not have even had a chance to access you to tell you thank you. I will thank you for them.
Thank you.
We really, really want you to stay hydrated and keep doing what you're doing.
Amen.
and then when your show breaks on a streaming service, I'm going to put it out there.
I put that out there earlier this week. I just think it would be interesting. I would love to have conversations with people that other people think are important, but you know, in a much more conversational style. So who knows? Mm-hmm. I'm going to put that out into the universe as well. I thank you for that. I affirm it that, you know, perhaps there's a role for me in front of the camera as well in 2020.
There you go. And then I'm going to also affirm a stylist, a hairdresser, a makeup artist that actually knows how to do all those things. Because we don't want to get one without the other because I've been there and it's crazy.
Yeah, for real. For real. Yeah, that is a huge thing. And, you know, and everybody talks about those ongoing issues.
So I'm going to bless you with a show and a team, girl.
Amen. I receive it.
Thank you so much, April. I appreciate it.
Thanks. This was fantastic. Thank you.
Isn't she great? I definitely think that April deserves a talk show with like a full team. Don't you? Definitely follow April's Twitter account at Reign of April. That's Reign like the crown, R-E-I-G-N. Reign of April on Twitter, because she's going to be giving those of us who don't want to necessarily support the Oscars something else to support. So definitely keep your eye on Twitter for that. And I will put in the show notes her Twitter handle again. Also coming up, I am going to be in a comic book. I am, well, ish. I'm kind of in Marvel's Voices. Online, you will see an article that I wrote to contribute to the Marvel Voices number one comic. The actual comic drops the 19th. I believe my portion will hit the website on the 17th. I'm kind of excited about that. And in addition, I'm also sort of partnering. Also this month, I'm partnering with Sci-Fi Wire for their Blurred History Month campaign. So every week on Instagram stories, on Sci-Fi Wire's Instagram stories, you will see me quizzing you about some blurred history. And I'm also writing a bunch of articles along with Jermaine McLaughlin. You can see those up on the site. This week, the one that I dropped was basically the Black history that's behind Watchmen, the real Black history. And it's more than just the Tulsa bombings. I know people don't realize that, but it's more than just Bass Reeves and the Tulsa bombings. There's quite a bit more Black history that's hidden in those episodes in that season. Please, please check that out. Comment on the Sci-Fi and let me know what you think. And speaking of commenting, please comment on this site. You should subscribe. You should have subscribed already, but if you haven't, please subscribe and comment. And if you feel extra, extra special, screenshot this episode and then run on over to Instagram stories. Tag the Blurred Girl, T-H-E-B-L-E-R-D-G-U-R-L. Tell me what you thought. And I might just feature you on my page. So please, please do that as soon as you can. thank you as usual for your support. I will have information in the show notes as always. Please tell your friends about this little podcast. Let them know that it's now weekly and I'm trying to drop these on Thursdays as close to Thursday as I possibly can. Bear with me until I can afford a team. Thank you as always, and I will see you on the interwebs.